Hello there, and welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. My name is Caleb, and I'm joined by Dr. Scott Keith and Adam Francisco. Today, we are going back to theological topics. We're going to do some doctrine-type things today. We're going to talk about the theology of the cross versus a theology of glory, which are some phrases that I'm sure longtime listeners will recognize from the show, because this phrase has come up in the past. In fact, I think just a couple weeks ago when I was editing this show, I heard Dr. Keith say theology of the cross just very briefly in one episode. Right before Reformation Day. So I think it was like 3 weeks before Reformation Day last year, 2017, the 500th anniversary, we did an episode on the Heidelberg Disputation, which is where this phrase originally comes from, right? Or the first time that we've seen it used in writing, the theology of the cross. And so what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about kind of that thesis within the Heidelberg Disputation a little more. We're going to talk about how this impacts theology broadly and all doctrines broadly, and possibly talk about how we deviate from a theology of the cross into a theology of glory, and how and when that happens. So that's what we're going to do today. But before that, just some typical announcements. Once again, thank you for all of your questions and concerns about the show. I've had some technical questions about stuff going on the website, so I typically try to get back to you. If you've seen an error on the show with an episode or something like that, we're still working on, it's not an entirely new website, but we made some edits to the organizational structure of the site. And so I'm going through and checking episodes that people have told me, hey, there's something wonky here. The audio is playing weird, or I've even had somebody say it plays a different episode than what it says. So I'm working on that. If in doubt and you still really want to listen to that episode, the entire catalog is available on pretty much every podcasting app. There are a couple podcasting apps that only display on the surface the last 100 episodes, which is crazy to think that we've done, I think, double that now. I think we're almost to, we're like at 150 episodes or something like that. But you can get that on the iTunes podcasting app, I believe on Google Play, I know for sure on Overcast, and I want to say on Podcast Addict as well. You can see the entire catalog of episodes all the way back to episode one. So if you've been jumping around and you say, hey, I've been trying to go back to like episode 7, but I'm having problems, go check out the iTunes podcasting app or Podcast Addict or Overcast, and you should be able to see/download the whole catalog if you want. I think it would take up quite a bit of space on your device, but theoretically, if you really wanted, you could download every episode to your phone.
Just binge listen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Turn off Netflix. Listen to Thinking Fellows.
There you go, because that's what we do. So
speak for yourself.
Yeah, maybe. So yeah, so that's just kind of on the technical end of things. Once again, you know, these kind of problems, in a sense, are good problems because it means that people are engaged with content, and there's more and more people coming to the website, coming to the podcast. So thank you for sharing it with your friends, with your churches and the like. Thank you for the people who have helped get us shout outs and things like the Lutheran Witness or on other websites and things like that. So just a big thank you to listeners once again for your support. So without further ado, we will hop in to today's topics. So I know we've done an entire episode on the Heidelberg Disputation, but perhaps we could get a little background on the Heidelberg Disputation, and maybe start talking about why this phrase, why a theology of the cross?
Well, first of all, you got to know that this episode makes me nervous, because my recollection of the last time we did theology of the cross, theology of glory, was in Norway with Jim Nestigen and John Pless. And to follow Jim Nestigen on the theology of cross versus theology of glory kind of puts me a little bit on my heels. But essentially, in 1518, you know, Luther is goes to Heidelberg, I think in April, and he presents this Heidelberg Disputation, who is presided over, I think, by Beyer. And it's at this point in time, he's still an Augustinian, right, Adam? At 1518, mm-hmm. Yeah, he's still an Augustinian. And so this is prior to Diet of Worms, 1521. This is prior to the Augsburg Confession, 1530. I mean, this is sort of right out of the gate stuff. 1517 is when he writes the 95 Theses. Maybe that's the match that lights the powder keg. You know, that's debatable. But if that's not, something like the Heidelberg Disputations certainly are. Because in this, what Luther does is he expresses, I mean, very clearly through 28 theses, a positive theology that I think will become the bedrock for the theology of the Reformation.
Yeah.
Now, it's not fully developed, you know, Lutheran Reformational theology, but it's certainly the bedrock of that. I mean, and you can see it as it starts out just in Thesis 1. The law of God, the most salutary doctrine of life, cannot advance man on his way to righteousness, but rather hinders him. That's Thesis 1. I mean, so he pulls the classic Martin Luther, and he comes out swinging here. And this is an important thing to see, because we have a hard time understanding the context of what's going on within Roman Catholic theology at this time. And even, Adam, like Roman Catholic political life as it applies to its influence on theology and back and forth, is that there's a necessity in Roman Catholic theology of the time for the law to do its work in the life of the Christian, so that their participation in the church is assured, and their acknowledgement of the authority of the church is assured. And for Luther and Augustinian monk to come out in a set of 28 propositions, and as the first one say, yes, the law of God is there, it's always going to be there, it's the most salutary doctrine that you can have in your life, but it cannot do what you think it can do, or what the church is teaching you that it can do, it cannot, it will not make you righteous.
Yeah. And that's the Heidelberg Disputation, and I think even this emphasis on the theology of the cross is a shifting of your theological perspective from do it yourself, or you know, the do your best and God will do the rest, you know, semi-Pelagianism of Luther's time, to a full focus center on the work of Christ.
Right, from beginning to end. And it's laid out in, I mean, a way where you have the 28 positive theses, and then you have the proofs for the thesis. I mean, where he'll go through and he'll say, you know, this is what the apostles taught, and he'll give you chapter and verse where to go find is what Paul taught. You'll even get some tie back to theologians of the past and what the church has taught in the past. And it's even Old Testament references there come out in the proofs of this is what's been taught in the Church of Christ from before the incarnation to the incarnation, New Testament times and on. I mean, it's a very comprehensive and backed up argument for what has been now called the theology of the cross. That you know, and what's the difference? Well, the difference is pretty simple. Is it that one, I mean, I think it starts out with, and Luther argues this time and time again here, that we can only know about our salvation from what God has revealed to us in Christ and through the writings about in the Old Testament and the writings about Christ in the New Testament. We cannot delve into the hidden things of God with our own reason or with our own conjecture, which is very much what he saw going on at the church in his time, right? That was one of the big problems that he thought was going on, is that essentially you had philosophers doing theology, and in the process of doing theology, if the scriptures weren't clear on an answer, well, you just go ahead and construct through your rational acumen some, you know, top-down theology that would take care of that. And that salvation cannot be attained, or will not be attained, or righteousness or justification will not be attained by anything that you do here on this earth, but only through what was done for you in the cross of Christ, on the cross by Christ Jesus, and that's it. And that the theology of the cross has to do with suffering of Christ, the death of Christ, the resurrection of Christ for you. Period. The end. And that's the only way you know about your salvation.
Yeah, and that's where I think, like, the importance of, you know, mentioning that in the proofs there are Old Testament references, there are New Testament references, that Luther is emphasizing that the purpose of the revelation that we have is concerning this salvation, and the mode of that salvation is Christ alone. And so that's And that's what he's trying to accomplish here with this thing. And so the antithesis to that, right? And that's, I think it's hard to talk about the theology of the cross without talking about the counter to that. The theology of glory is exactly what you were talking about going on, right? Is self-justification in one form or the other.
Yeah. And this is, I mean, I think the distinction here between the theology of the cross and theology of glory, it's a notoriously difficult thing to discuss because it's a very abstract idea. I mean, it's abstract that meets real life for the believer. But as we talk about it, we're talking in ideas, and our tendency is to go I think towards to be sentimental towards it. And even when we talk about suffering, to sort of focus on our own suffering rather than the suffering of Christ and that type of thing. And that I'm bearing our cross and not the cross that Christ bore for us and that type of thing. And we tend to go there, and that's because at the end of the day, the reason this is important to discuss is because we're all theologians of glory.
Yeah.
Every single one of us. I mean, in all of our study and our lack of study and or whatever, in every degree of our theological ability, our tendency is to be a theologian of glory. Our tendency is to focus on ourself, to focus on our own works, to focus on our own desires. In fact, that's, you know, what the bondage of the will at the end of the day gets at, is that we are driven, our will, our drive, our desire is driven either by the devil, who would have us focus on us, or by Christ, right? And to focus on his suffering, and that's it. And so, I mean, it's difficult to discuss this without slipping into very technical, very formal theological language, so we might want to give that sort of, hey, we're sorry.
Yeah. No, yeah, because you're going to be abstracts, like you said. A lot of this is going to, it's going to be hard to talk about without examples, too, that may not actually capture everything, or the nuance of, you know, theology of glory invading our life, or how much the theology of the cross actually affects every doctrine, and just justification, but that deviation happens maybe in doctrines we would consider auxiliary, and then sneak their way in.
Well, yeah, and it's a good point. This is a good thing to point out because for Luther, I think it's important to say that the theology of the cross is not like a chapter in a theology book. It's not like you're going to flip through a systematic theology and this chapter is going to be on the theology of the cross. For Luther, this is theology.
This is his biblical theology, way to look at that.
In fact, last semester I did a readings class, and part of that was on Gerhard Ferdy's book on being a theologian of the cross. And one of the things I said time and time again in here is that there's an important distinction between somebody like Melanchthon and somebody like Luther as a theologian. Melanchthon, I mean, he's many things. He was an exegete. He wrote apostles, you know, for pastors and preaching resources. But at the end of the day, through his confessions and through his Loci Communis, he's known pretty much either as an educator or as a humanist and as a systematic theologian.
Yeah, and the first Protestant systematic theologian should definitely be the credit to his name.
Absolutely. But Luther is not that. Luther is what many have called an occasional theologian. And that doesn't mean that he did theology only occasionally. But really, when he wrote specific books on theology, he was writing to particular occasions from the perspective of a biblical theologian. In other words, he's a doctor of the Bible, okay, and he's studying the scriptures, and eventually he's studying them in Greek and he's studying them in Hebrew, so much so that he's translating them from Greek and Hebrew into German. Mm-hmm. And then he's asked about certain things or sees certain problems, like even the Small Catechism is written because after the visitations to the various parishes where the Lutheran visitors were sent out to examine the state of things in the quote-unquote Lutheran lands or the evangelical lands, they find that things are so bad that the priests don't even know the Ten Commandments in many cases. And so on that occasion, Luther sits down to write the Small Catechism. So even the three treatises on the Address to the Christian Nobility, the Freedom of the Christian, and the Babylonian Captivity of the Church, they're written to an occasion. The bondage of the will, right? Yep. What's the occasion? Erasmus writes the freedom. Erasmus is kind of goaded into writing the freedom of the will.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Luther is kind of goaded into writing the response on the bondage of the will on an occasion.
Well, and if you look at even like the titles in the collections of Luther's works, right, they're usually letters to to people or groups. I mean, a lot of them, that several that I've read for research are addressed to even particular towns of people. Or,
sure.
You know, open letters.
Yeah. Open letters to people struggling with ordination, or, you know, all these different things.
Well, if our listeners have or have seen Luther's works on a shelf, you know, you're going to have correspondence. You're going to have sermons. You're going to have lectures. You're going to have writings, right? And that's, you're going to have them broken down, at least, if not that way, similar to that. And so you can see the occasions to which he writes through that. I'm writing a letter, I'm writing a sermon, I'm writing a lecture, or I'm writing a book that has to do with something going on.
For Luther, theology is eminently practical. It's rooted in academic study, you know, real serious grappling with the text, considering consequences and rationale of things and so on. But if it's not applicable, Luther really doesn't engage in much speculation, very little speculation. Right. He can do it, to be sure.
Yeah,
his disputation on scholastic theology, later in life, his disputation that on the passage that the Word became flesh or something like that. These things are brilliant works of scholastic theology, and he can do that. But for Luther, maybe it's the context, or maybe it's just his personality. He didn't want to spend a whole lot of time engaging in speculation and theorizing, because for him, what one believes, or probably more specifically, who one trusts in for their salvation, is a matter of life and death. And he's eminently an occasional, and maybe we could say a pastoral theologian. He is really interested. He took his obligations, his ordination vows, and his obligations to hear confession, to pronounce absolution, to preach the gospel, to distribute the sacraments. As that was sort of like the central thing, though he's called to do a gajillion things. That's what he would thought. That's where the rubber hits the road for him.
Yeah,
where the real action is in the church. On whatever, you know, Sunday or whatever day, where the saints are present who need to hear the word of God in law and gospel. So, and that's when he talks about, you mentioned earlier, because I think about this a lot, the theology of the cross, and how we take that terminology and apply it to all sorts of things that's not really what it means. I mean, we use it to justify failings, you know, like, oh, this is just me suffering,
we all have our cross to bear.
That is really a prime example of a theology of glory, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you're pointing out that this is your cross to bear, that's probably a theology of glory. You say, if you're pointing out you in some theological proposition other than as a miserable sinner in need of saving, that's a theology of glory. Mm-hmm. And maybe even while pointing yourself out as a miserable sinner in need of saving. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there could be a certain amount of false humility that's coming in there.
Yes.
That is a theology of glory. And that's the point of the theology of the cross versus the theology of glory, is to reveal that we are all theologians of glory.
Yeah.
And that most of what we do and say in some way, shape, or form is meant to highlight ourselves and to diminish Christ rather than to highlight Christ and diminish ourselves.
Yeah. You know, I think John Warwick Montgomery, he has a book called Christ as Center and Circumference. And I think that's his sort of way of talking about a theology of the cross. That is, the center of our view of things, our theology and other things is ordered around the crucifixion, and we add the resurrection of Jesus. But it's also the circumference. It lets us know when we've gone too far, when we're moving beyond the a posteriori things of God, where God really reveals himself in a very clear and precise way. When we go beyond that, and it's beyond the reality of the crucifixion, the resurrection, then we've gone too far. We're it's entirely possible, if not absolutely sure, that we're engaging in sort of speculation or a theology of glory.
Yeah. Dr. Montgomery wouldn't like being compared to Ferdy, but Ferdy would say it this way, is that the theologian of glory is always trying to peek behind the curtain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not satisfied with focusing on the death and resurrection of Christ for you, but wants to look into back behind the curtain to the hidden things of God, the why, the how. Doesn't what I do really matter? What about what I do after I come to faith? All of these things. Looking behind the whys and those particular sort of maybe motivations that aren't answered in the scriptures other than because of his great love for us.
Which is the classical start to pretty much every Christian heresy. I mean, even Christology, the problems come with starting to explore much farther beyond what the scriptures speak of regarding Christ and starting to do philosophy about Christ, which is what you talked about Luther addressing very specifically at the beginning here, is, you know, philosophers doing theology.
And I would say, I would want to make one distinction, Adam, between, say, what Dr. Montgomery does in Crisis Center and Circumference and what Luther does. And maybe you say what Luther does as explained by Ferdy-type theologians, is that Dr. Montgomery lays out this sort of the systematic view of understanding this thing, where Christ is the center of the hub, and every spoke that comes off of it is another doctrine, and the actual rim of the wheel is the circumference that binds everything together, and Christ is the center of all of that. Whereas what Ferdy does, I think following along in, with the Heidelberg Disputations, it's proclamatory. In other words, it's focused on preaching, which I think is in line very much with Luther. It's focused on the proclamation of the cross of Christ for you, the sinner, as the focus of why we do this thing we call theology and of why this conversation is important and why this gospel needs to be preached. Whereas, say, what Melanchthon did and what Dr. Montgomery does in Christ the Center and Circumference, both necessary, it's sometimes called second-order discourse, has mostly to do with the explaining of that as we see it in the scriptures. Mm-hmm. It's the difference between me looking at you as my son and saying, I love you, and me
explaining
giving you,
why it's important to love your children.
Right. Yeah. Or explaining why I love you, or explaining, you know, the depth of my love or what I would do for you because I love you, all of those things. You know, they're both important and you should know both of those things. But when proclaimed, Caleb, I love you, that's a different kind of impact than my explanation of the specificity of my love.
Yeah, which, I mean, I think gets to what Adam was talking about, where Luther is engaging in pastoral theology, where we might say Melanchthon is, again, doing systematics, or even Montgomery in that instance.
Yeah, well, one's being a father and one sort of describing what a father does.
Yeah, it's a great analogy. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and then we will get back into the show. Hello there and welcome to our break. We're going to talk about the Here We Still Stand conference for 2018. We are doing this again. Last year, we celebrated the 500th anniversary of the Reformation with the Here We Still Stand conference, the first one. And we didn't know if it was going to be the first one and the last one, but it ended up being such a good conference, and I think so well received that we decided, hey, we're going to try to do this annually. In fact, we're going to do this annually. And this year, we're going to do the conference that the topic is the theology of the cross, because the first time was 2017, 500th anniversary of the Reformation, and this year is the 500th anniversary of the Heidelberg Disputation, right? And that's probably not as well known, so you can't name the conference the Heidelberg Disputation, but you can name it the main thesis out of there, right?
Which like is five people show up.
Which is the theology of the cross. And so this year, the lineup is incredible, I think. We got a lot of, because we had, we knew what we were getting into, and we knew the topic at hand. We kind of hand-selected people, and we're really excited. We have names like John Pless is coming out this year to give a talk, right? Jim Nessigan is going to be
Paulson.
There. Steve Paulson's going to be there. All people we've had on the show, actually, before, which is pretty awesome.
I didn't even think about that, but that's probably true. I mean, Jeff Mallinson's going to be one of the speakers. Some of the people that you probably haven't heard as much, or Dave Zoll's coming back again. Daniel Price will be one of the speakers. Elise Fitzpatrick will be out again. Rod Rosenblatt will be there. Matt Popovitz will be there again. Dan Van Voorhis. So Virtue in the Wasteland is
fully represented.
Breakout sessions and or smaller sessions. You have Jacob Smith, who's the rector at Calvary St. George in New York City, an Episcopal parish.
So our Anglican friends are represented this time, and we just did an episode on Thomas Cranmer and C.S. Lewis, two big Anglicans, right?
Yeah, and it's a very Lutheran-esque Anglican congregation there at Calvary St. George. Donovan Riley, Cindy Koch, I think I already said that, R.J. Grunwald, Eric Sorensen, Steve Hine will be there, Paul Koch will be speaking.
And Steve Hine actually has a book called Christian Life, Cross or Glory,
right?
That deals with this in
absolutely
in American Christianity particularly.
Absolutely.
So that's going to be a fantastic conference. Tickets are on sale now. The registration is much more limited than it was last year.
Yeah, last year we were able to register about 450. This year we're knocking it down to about 350. I believe about 100 of those spots are already taken.
Yeah.
Same location. It'll be at the Hyatt Regency Mission Bay and Spa in San Diego. The dates are October 18 through 20 of 2018. I believe the cost is $199. Yep, it's $199. If you want to come to the podcast pre-conference and lunch, that's an extra $30. That may seem like a lot of money, but let me tell you, the value that you get in food and...
The food was outstanding.
And free adult beverage,
yes.
Included.
That was outstanding as well.
Much surpasses the $200 price.
To a conference, there's a lot of, I don't want to say partying, because it's not like a party.
The mutual consolation and fellowship of the brethren.
Right. There's a lot of good conversation over good food and good drink that happened there, and it's fantastic. The big thing for Thinking Fellows listeners and fans is that pre-recording, which we do a live show there, and that's going to be great, because what we try to do there is we have... me, Dr. Keith, Dr. Rosenblatt, Dr. Francisco, and then we're going to get a guest again.
We'll probably have two guests.
We'll probably have multiple, which is going to be pretty... Yeah. It's pretty cool. It's a fun format.
We need to do... While we're there, we need to do several podcasts this year. Can we have John Plesser, Jim Nestigan there, Steve Paulson there.
We're gonna do at least one live recording. Yeah. And you know what? I will probably try to see how many times we can get people to come view other things. So if you are a Thinking Fellows listener, this is probably a really great opportunity for you to get a look at the inside of the show and maybe even participate in the show in the form of live questions. So
you could come prepared with questions.
Yeah, and come meet the fellows. I think it's gonna be a fantastic time. It's herewestillstand.org, right? Or is it?
Yeah, that's it.
Herewestillstand.org. You can sign up now. And then also one of the things that a lot of people I think forgot to do last year was also sign up for your hotel room, which is also on the website. So, and if you're at that same location, it makes things really convenient. You don't have to drive. You don't have to Uber. There's food, breakfast, lunch, dinner provided there for many of the days.
Yeah, it just makes so much sense. I mean, the conference doesn't stop after the last speaking session, essentially. I mean, mm-hmm. you have the opportunity with, 350 like-minded people and people that you've maybe been learning from for years who are there. They're hanging out. They understand that they're there to meet and to interact with you, the person who's coming to the conference. They get that when... I'm not going to say me because nobody wants to talk to me, but when Adam shows up,
I don't want to talk to me either.
He gets that he's there to not only to do his thing in his lecture and or to record the podcast, but because people want to talk to him. And so that doesn't stop after the last session. So it makes a lot of sense to stay at the hotel, and it makes it safe to stay, because you're not staying out till 1 a.m. talking to your favorite theologian and then trying to get back to wherever you're staying.
I also think that even some of the cost savings you may think you get by going down to another hotel, you're going to Uber over, get a taxi over, have to rent a car. I think after the 3 or 4 days, you're probably better off just being at the hotel.
And it's a great hotel, by the way.
A lot of amenities, a great pool, things like that. Yeah.
Three of them.
Yeah.
Water slides, hot tubs.
So come join us. Come here on the many different topics centered on this theology that we're doing in this episode. That's the theology of the cross.
Yeah, check it out. Again, herewestillstand.org. The date is, it's October 18 through 20, 2018 in San Diego at the Hyatt Regency Mission Bay and Spa. Registration is $199. Pre-conference podcast is an extra $30, and that gets you lunch.
Cool. All right, so we're gonna continue onward here. We kind of talked about how the theology of the cross, rather than a systematic category, is a part of Luther's biblical theology, right? And how he sees our salvation working out from the beginning, all the way in Genesis to the end of Revelation here in the scriptures, and how that then affects how we do all of our theology. And I think the really important thing that you said is that at some point we are all theologians of glory. And I think really one of the big takeaways for me on this episode would be recognizing and admitting that. Because you would want to be a theology of the cross all the time. But part of understanding when you do theology, when you explain it, is that you are going to sneak yourself back in.
Right.
It's not a, you might sneak yourself back in. It's a, yeah. you are going to. do this.
Yeah, for me, it's kind of like understanding when you... So when you get into academic research and academic writing, one of the first things that you have to... Not to steal too much from the postmodernist, but one of the things that you have to realize is that you going into anything, any piece of research, that you probably have biases.
Yeah.
And the answer when you realize you have biases is not to say that truth can never be found.
Or to say, I don't have biases and try to hide them.
Or to say, I don't have biases and try to hide them. The goal is to say, I do have biases that I'm trying to be objective. You know, I'm trying to lay that out for you. And as I approach this, I'm trying to be objective. But I realize that at some point some of these might come in. And to acknowledge that, at least acknowledge it in your own head as you approach the research. It's really the same thing here. I mean, if we can acknowledge that at our in our hearts we're all theologians of glory, you know, which perhaps in itself, again, trying to say that is could be itself a theology of glory, is, and that's a problem. It at least provides an understanding that when you approach the theology of the cross, you probably will be trying to find a way to work yourself back in, and that you might be out on be on the lookout for it. This is what Ferdy says in his description: a theology of glory. In a theology of glory, the cross becomes a repair job that will allow the soul to continue on its journey to glory.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is what he says, Ferdy says, the theology of the cross insists on being its own story. No longer I who live, but Christ crucified in us. In other words, that you have to die, right? That the message of hope is only for dead people, as Capon would say. And that our big problem is that we don't realize we're dead, and that's why we stay out of the great party that's been hosted for the prodigal son's return.
In a sense, it's a very compact way of describing a theology of law and gospel, right? Because admitting that you're a theology of glory is admitting your need for the law to come and tell you that you cannot do it, and then to hear Christ proclaim to you that you are forgiven of that, that you are now free from that.
Right, and I think one of the most succinct ways I heard this said was last year at the Here We Still Stand conference. It's actually on the herewestillstand.org website, is Dan Price got up and said, you know, we are to preach the whole counsel of God, and Christ crucified for you is the whole counsel of God. You know, it's an understanding that the entire scriptures, Genesis to Revelation, and your entire life in the faith, from the time you come to the faith, at the time you're baptized, until the time you die in the faith, is centered on the whole counsel of God for you is Christ's death and resurrection for you. And it was all given to that purpose. You read the story of Abraham, and it's pointing to Christ. You know, the travel of the Israelites, the exodus of the Israelites outside of Egypt, pointing to Christ. Christ's baptism is pointing to his death and resurrection for you. You know, all of it is there so that you might die to yourself and be resurrected in Christ.
Fantastic. I mean, we've done this a couple times, right? And I think one of the reasons that I'm drawn to, you know, put this on the schedule again and to talk about this again is because no matter how many times we do it, it's necessary to revisit this Christ-centered theology in one way or another, whether that's talking about episodes particularly about justification and repentance, or talking about law and gospel, or talking about the theology of the cross, is seeing this, that our salvation is extra nos, and having that reestablished constantly across this show. Because the point of the Thinking Fellows really is good conversations, but good conversations that hopefully lead to Christ, right? Even when we're talking about the history of the church and great thinkers as a Christian faith. Why are the people on our list added on our list, even if we disagree with them on some doctrines? Because at some level or another, they proclaimed Christ in their writings, in their teachings, in their preaching. Why do we adventure on apologetics? Because in the course of evangelism, you're going to hit people who push back against that proclamation of Christ. And so we try to bring things back to this. And so to me, this is kind of a centering episode, right? To put us kind of back on center and to see what is the point of our show. And the point of our show is this, is a theology of the cross. And right, to see it in all parts of our theology.
We do history, we do apologetics, we do theology. But hopefully everything that we do is leading back to the proclamation of the gospel that Christ died for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important. Right, it's important for you to know. And when we do the other episodes, we're basically telling that story. We did a show on Thomas Cranmer, but we're telling the story of how God has worked through the lives and the deaths of people whom he has called to proclaim his cross to other sinners. You know, Christ's death and resurrection to other sinners. So it's, I mean, it's what we're about, hopefully.
Great.
That would sound like a theology of glory when I said that.
It did. But so to end this episode, and I really do like this model, to get a couple book recommendations out there. We've kind of slightly mentioned it a couple times. Ferdy has a book called On Being a Theologian of the Cross, right, which is available on Amazon, and I'll put that in the show notes. I talked,
which is basically a breakdown of the Heidelberg Disputation.
Yeah, I think that is the subtitle
in detailed form. Yeah. That's what it is. So you get to read Luther's Heidelberg Disputations, and then you get to read sort of Ferdy's commentary on it.
Yeah, the preface of that book is Ferdy saying, you know, I think he's complaining about how in the last 150 years there really hasn't been any work done on the Heidelberg Disputation that was at the lay level, and I think he explains that the book is to. There, he mentions another book that is academic, and I think
it's
only in German.
Von Loewenwich.
Yes, and
translated into English for $200.
Yeah,
as Luther's Theology of the Cross.
Was that all?
Yeah. And so I think, what Ferdy's kind of accomplished there is introducing people to the Heidelberg Disputation. We mentioned it during the break just a little bit. Is we publish at 1517 Publishing The Christian Life, Cross or Glory by Stephen Hine, and this book looks at American Christianity and kind of the praise of theology of glory and just the big prevalence of a theology of the glory in popular televangelists and radio evangelists and things like that.
Well, and specifically in teachings on sanctification.
Correct.
Which is where this mostly comes out these days in popular evangelicalism is you teach a sanctification that is wholly focused on developing your Christian walk so that you might, I don't know, develop into the Christian that God intends you to be instead of continually focus on the work of Christ for you on the cross.
And so I think this is actually one of the best resources after listening to this episode. If you are in that evangelical tradition or you are encountering a lot of that, I think this is a fantastic book to kind of refocus the conversation about sanctification. So I think that's a great resource. It's at shop.1517legacy.com. I'll include that in the show notes. Is there anything else that people should?
I think they should check out McGrath's Luther's Theology of the Cross, Alistair McGrath.
Yeah, I think.
I mean, that's going to be a non-Lutheran look. He's an academic. He's a British academic. Look at Luther's Theology of the Cross. I'm going to throw one at you that doesn't have the title that's the Theology of Glory or Theology of Cross, but that's Bob Kolb, Dr. Robert Kolb, The Genius of Luther's Theology, A Wittenberg Way of Thinking.
Yes.
It's an excellent book. You definitely come to reading that book to come understand different approaches to theology and specifically the genius of Luther's particular way of approaching theology. And Kolb, you know, he's brilliant.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think that's pretty good good list of resources there. I think everything but the McGrath book are really short, too. I think
The McGrath book's not big.
It's not too big? I mean,
it's not big, but it is pretty...
It's weighty. It's more academic. Dense,
yeah, but not in an it's weighty, dense in an understandable way.
Yeah. I think so.
That's good. So I think,
it's 208 pages.
Okay, yeah, and the rest are probably sub 200. So these are all really accessible. I think they'd all be worth your time to read if you are interested in learning outside of the show and continuing down these ideas that we talk about. So I think that's it for today. I know that we will come across this topic later down the road. Now, I think for new listeners, if you hear something like Theology of the Glory or Theology of the Cross in an episode, because sometimes it just comes up in one sentence or two as we're talking about other points, you have a frame of reference now. So this is kind of like that Defining Our Terms episode. We kind of went through and defined what Theology of the Cross is through the Heidelberg Disputation. Once again, thank you for listening to the show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show. What that does is it helps us figure out how many listeners are out there, and it also makes it so that you don't miss an episode if you forget to download it, or if you're traveling on vacation or something like that. The shows and podcasting apps that you subscribe to auto-queue into your feed when they release. And so even if you don't listen the day it comes out, it'll be there, you know, maybe the next morning for your daily commute. And so we can get a sense of who's listening. And so you can do that on, if you're on an iPhone, you can do that on the standard Apple podcasting app that comes on your phone. You can download a variety of apps like the Overcast app or the Radio Public app. On Android, you can also get, I believe the best one over there that I've been told is Podcast Addict. I've had several listeners say, hey, if I listen on Android, what's a good app? There's not a fantastic stock experience there. Podcast Addict is what I've been suggested. So please go check those out. You can subscribe to the show on those various apps. Once again, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next week.